Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, and welcome to another edition of Android Faithful, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for, as we said, the Android Faithful. I'm Ron Richards, and with me, as always...
Oh, it's me, Jason Howell, also...
Quinn Twitdow is also here. That's me.
And I'm back this week, y'all. Michelle Rahman.
We got a stack deck. The full team is here. Michelle, you survived not only CES, but also Samsung Galaxy Unpacked. How are you?
How do you do it?
I'm glad to finally be in a place where it's not filled with smoke all over. Gosh, that's the one thing I did not like about Vegas.
Oh, I was going to say, Samsung Galaxy Unpacked is known for the cigar smoking.
Like,
Of special effects from like the stage
and all the casinos, you know, all the casinos, all the slot machines.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Yeah. The first time I went to CES, and I went to Vegas, and I stayed at New York Hotel, which I was just laughing at the entire time because I'm from New York, and that's nothing like that. And I remember I was there for like a day and a half, and I said to David Prager, who I worked with at Revision 3, my good close personal friend, I turned to him like, the thing about Vegas that gets me is the smell of desperation. Like everywhere you go, everything just feels desperate.
Yeah, it's like lingering in the air. Whether you can smell it or not, you can totally feel it.
Right,
it's
exactly. And then I sat down at the bar.
You're wearing it like a coat.
I sat down at the bar to get a drink, and a lovely woman came up and talked to me for a good while. And then she wanted money.
I hear that happens in Vegas too.
Yeah. But anyway, Michelle, you've survived and you're here to tell the tale of Samsung Galaxy Unpacked. We're super excited for that. But before we get started, we just want to remind everybody, and I want to thank everybody for helping to support the show. In fact, we are all now independent podcasters. Jason, you're Mr. Independent Podcaster now. But Android Faithful is completely owned by the four of us, and we're doing it on our own. And we want to thank everybody for your support. And if you're not supporting the show yet, you can go to AndroidFaithful.com, and there you can find a link to our Patreon at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. And there you can sign up we've got several different levels of that folks can sign up for. As low as $5 a month, you can sign up and you get a free sticker mailed out to you, and you get access to our Patreon exclusive Discord. If you sign up for $10 a month, you get that sticker as well as a ad-free podcast feed, so you can listen to the show without any ads. But if you sign up for $20 a month, don't know if you know, but you get the ad-free podcast feed, you get the Discord access, you get the sticker, but you also get a t-shirt. I don't know if people realize you get a t-shirt. I don't think in 28 episodes we've shown the t-shirt, because I know that the four of us don't have a t-shirt, but I wanted to show everybody, this is the cool Android Faithful t-shirt that my friends here, Steve and Tina, are hanging out, just hanging out in their Android Faithful t-shirts. But yeah, this is this show, it's the awesome Android Faithful logo on a t-shirt that you get mailed to you from our friends at Patreon. So just wanted everyone to know that you get a t-shirt if you sign up for that $20 level. And so we want to thank everybody for their support. And there's a reminder that if you are an eccentric benefactor and you want to sign up for the $500 a month, you could come on the show with us and be a guest on the show. So check that out. So
yeah, we're still waiting on that one.
Yeah, we are. But it will happen. I am confident in the Android Faithful that someone will want to hang out with us on a Tuesday night on the show live. So
I just have to say, the logo for this show is totally merchable. Like, it's a solidly merchable logo.
And that is on the 2024 to-do list, Jason, sir. That is, we're getting some exciting merch coming out soon, so that's for sure.
Before we get into things, can I just make one real quick thing about my Pixel 8, my 8 Pro? So I have the case. So when Google sent me this for review, they also sent me this case. So I think a lot of, you know, many other reviewers probably have a very similar case. And I can't show it with the screen, with this camera, because it doesn't do close-up very well, if at all. And my lights are really bright. But I just got to say, I've only had this for a couple of months, and the edges are starting to, like, pop open. So keep that in mind. That is the 8 Pro phone case by Google, and you might not have good luck with it, you know, long-term.
So, interesting. I'm not using a case on my Pixel 8 Pro, and I got to tell you, the screen is nicked. Like, I have got all the little micro scratches way more faster than I did the Pixel 7 Pro. And Wynn, you recently had a scare with your Pixel Fold, right?
Yes, perhaps, Ron, you would like to invest in a screen protector. Hey, everyone. Maybe. This is, I recently thought that at my family birthday party, where there were many, many toddlers banging spoons and butter knives onto many, many phones, that my phone was also, I mean, I think it might have been a victim of it. So I thought my Fold was cracked, and I was getting ready to go down to the same day repair. I went to see my assistant today. She was like, girl, you should get a screen protector. And then I looked at my phone. I was like, oh, I did have a screen protector. And it is glass. This is glass, and it's still cracked. But it is cracked. Not my Pixel Fold.
Good thing
Fold.
That cracked and not the Fold. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I did have referred care, but, you know, hey, you know what? Like, I think this is like, what, $12 or something? So
they're worth it. They really are.
Yeah, it's worth it. Tempered glass and toddler proofish.
Ish. Nothing is 100% toddler proof. As a parent of two toddlers, nothing is 100% toddler proof.
Right.
Although they're five now, maybe they're not toddlers anymore. But
it's a buffer, if anyway, anything. So get a screen protector.
So we've got so much Samsung stuff to talk about, but before, and Michelle, I know you're itching to get to it. Jason, I know you're going to talk about it at the end of the show, and we're going to put you on the spot, but for anybody who listens to this show and then doesn't listen all the way till the end, you have a new podcast, right?
Oh, wow. I didn't expect this so early. Yes, I do.
So do it real quickly, and then we'll talk more about it at the end of the show.
Okay, I announced last week a new podcast with Jeff Jarvis, me and Jeff Jarvis, called AI Inside. We were testing it at Twit while I was at Twit, inside the Club Twit walls, and now we're taking it public. And, you know, of course, I got Twit's blessing to do that. So we've got our episode one tomorrow. Go to AIinside.show and watch with us, and hopefully the ship holds together.
It will hold together. It won't be a hallucination. I'm positive. So, all right. Well, you're gonna tell us more about it at the end of the show. So,
thank you.
Yeah, of course.
That's awesome.
All right. So that said, let's get into the Samsung action. Michelle, tell us what happened at Unpacked, because I didn't watch anything. I'm coming into this completely blind. They announced a phone.
Are you saying you want me to unpack Galaxy Unpacked?
Yes, Kenny,
please.
Unpacking Galaxy Unpacked. There you go.
Let's unpack that a little more.
The low-hanging fruit of a joke. You got to do it every time.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, of course, everyone knows that Samsung unveiled the Galaxy S24 series at Unpacked. You probably heard the headlines, or you were expecting it to be announced. But, of course, every year, Samsung just has so much information to offload during their Unpacked event. It's kind of hard to wrap your brain around everything that they show off. So while I was there, I did like a live thread that covered everything they were announcing, all the key points from the keynote. And surprisingly, one of the first things they started off with was the fact that all three devices in the S24 series will be getting 7 years of not only security, but also OS updates, which is huge.
Bravo! So
they're following Google. Like, Google did this, and that was a big deal when they did it, and now Samsung is doing it. That's an even bigger deal, considering how much more phones they sell, relatively.
Yeah. Now, do you think they did it because Google did it?
Surely they had to have already have had, like, committed to this before Google.
Right,
I mean, like, you don't make this kind of decision, like, spontaneously in response to another company doing it, right? Because this is this, you got to invest so much money to getting all your partners, like, to make sure you can do the updates appropriately, all the third-party vendors you have to work with, and so on, and investing the money beforehand, you know, there's no way this wasn't planned ahead of time.
They probably communicated, right, just so they didn't step on each other's toes. Like, hey, like, I get to go first. Like, we'll both do it, but I get to go first. Like, I get dibsies.
Well, and especially, you know, this event really illustrated the kind of the tighter relationship that Samsung and Google do have right now. And it just, while I was watching the event, you know, Hiroshi gets up on stage and talks about some of the things that I'm sure we'll talk about in coming minutes. But, you know, it reminded me of how many years ago when Samsung and Google were not kind of in that relationship. Samsung was stumbling over itself to never say the word Android. It really did not want to admit that anything there, you know, on stage wasn't a product of only them. And now we're seeing this tighter kind of relationship in a number of ways. We talked, was it last week or the week before, about quick share, nearby share, kind of that that combo, and in so many other ways. So I would be really surprised if they weren't in communication with each other around this in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. I don't know. Google was all over this announcement. Like, we'll be talking about one of the features that everyone associates with Google because it's directly coming from Google, which is Circle to Search. Yeah. But almost all of the AI-powered features that Samsung talked about that is part of the Galaxy AI suite is in some way related to Google. So the Galaxy S24 series, just like the Pixel 8 Pro, features Google's Gemini Nano large language model for some of its on-device features, but also a lot of the cloud-based AI features that they're unveiling with the Galaxy S24 series, they're running on Google Cloud's Gemini Pro backend. So, like, Google's AI is everywhere on this device, and Samsung is taking full advantage of it. And most of the keynote, they talked about so many different AI features in the native dialer app. They have a live translate feature that lets you, like, translate. You speak in one language and then it translates to another language and speaks it out the other end, and then vice versa. You have all these new features in the Samsung keyboard app, like tone, grammar, suggestions. You have a chat translation feature that translates whenever you're texting someone in, like, WhatsApp, for example. It translates in line the language that is being texted. There's a new interpreter app, which is just like the interpreter feature in, like, the Google Translate app. You have new auto formatting and summarization features in the Samsung Notes app, transcription summarizations in the Voice Recorder app, and a whole bunch of new features in the Gallery app that allow you to, like, move objects, allow you to delete objects, allow you to move objects around. Like, a lot of these things are things that you, if you have a Pixel phone, you already have them in the Google Photos app, you have them in the Keep app, you have them in the Gboard app. But now Samsung's native versions, their first-party versions of these apps, they're getting all of these features. So it kind of feels like Samsung is playing catch-up to Google in some sense. But on the other hand, you know, this is still, you get the best of all of those Google Pixel AI features, but you also have the Samsung hardware, and you don't have a Tensor modem. You have the Qualcomm modem. You have Samsung software support. You have Samsung's, you know, after-sales support, their accessory market, their Windows integration. So it's basically, it kind of feels like you're getting Pixel software features now, but without the Pixel hardware. And I don't know, I kind of dig that on the S24.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, if you have an S24, of course you dig it, right? I mean, the one thing I thought of is that it definitely, I don't know if it steals the sunshine or steals the thunder from the Pixel line a little more, or rather spreads what Google's doing with AR. Obviously, it spreads what Google's doing with AI, to more devices. But, like, does it lose a little, you know, jet fuel in the Pixel jet engine, I guess is my question, right?
I think the question then becomes, how important is the Pixel, really?
Right.
Why Google? Pixel?
You know, because, again, we're in a position where Google, where it feels like, yeah, it feels like some of that special sauce around the hardware is maybe being spread around to other devices. And at the end of the day, what is Google's strength? Google's strength, I think, is building these services that others can use. I love their hardware. Don't get me wrong. I have a Pixel, and I have since the beginning. But I don't know that the Pixel is an indication of their true hardware as a company. I think it's more about the services and the software that's underneath. And, you know, there have been a lot of people, like, questioning, like, okay, things are getting a lot tighter between Google and Samsung here. And, you know, Google is spreading the love around. Is there a possibility that Google plans at some point to take its foot off the gas of their hardware strategy and focus once again on the software and the AI and everything that's driving all of this stuff? Because they benefit so much from that.
That's all that I got, honestly, from the announcement, is that this is them kind of realizing that, I mean, realizing is the wrong word, because it's always been kind of funny, like, what is their aim with Pixel, right? Because I think we've all known for several years that even though they doubled their market share last year, they doubled from 2% to 4%. And it's not like, I don't know at what point in time you could have reasonably said they would expect to ever overtake or come close to Samsung or even, you know, Oppo or anybody else in terms of market share. But it's weird because, like, I was thinking last week, we covered how Assistant is just, like, you know, shuttering a lot of features. And it seems like there's a pivot going on in Google from stuff I've heard from just these stories that we've covered. And maybe that's it. Maybe they're like, hey, like, we need to not just refocus our efforts onto AI and all these features that we're good at, but find a way to repackage them to get them to a broader audience, right? And, like, because all these things, you know, none of this stuff has been a surprise in terms of innovativeness or kind of like novelty. The novelty is like, oh yeah, this tightness with Samsung, and Samsung is still like the number one Android OEM. Maybe like that they've just decided, okay, what we need to do is like, yeah, turn like maybe like pivot away from our own hardware as like the showcase for all of these features that are very googly, and letting Samsung, you know, be the spearhead on it. That's kind of what I got out of it. I don't know. I don't work at Google. Wouldn't be able to tell you if I did anyway, but that's what it felt like to me, especially with all the other stuff. And I think some of the, like, for example, some of the layoffs that happened were part of, I think hardware had a bunch of layoffs and core engineering. So it just feels like there's a big shift, and this kind of would make sense. Tinfoil hat, like, now on the side. So anyway.
Well, I think Google's strategy can more be summed up of they're no matter like what happens with their own hardware, they're still winning either way. Like, as I just mentioned, like, their Gemini Nano model is being used on device. Their Gemini Pro model is being used for cloud-based features. And even though it's not their first-party apps that are being benefited from, like, they're still getting paid, like, somehow, right? Like, all the Galaxy AI features, Samsung is only promising they'll be free until the end of 2025. They haven't said that, you know, if they're going to charge for it, but someone's getting paid either way. And this is running on Google's model. So, like, Google's probably the one getting a big bag of money to run a lot of these AI features in the future.
Yeah, that was really confusing to me on where Google left off. Like, where does Google leave off and where does Samsung begin in regards to Galaxy AI? It's because the feature seems so familiar and it's powered by Gemini. Does anyone know exactly, like, what is the line between Samsung and Google with these features? Because it's kind of confusing, I guess, maybe just as someone who knows this.
Gemini is just the underlying model that it's being used to power these features. Yeah. And it seems like Google's broad strategy is basically you have Android and then you have iPhone. And with Android, you have a choice of hardware. You're not just limited to one phone. You can have Pixel and get the best of Google features. You can have Samsung and get the best of Android and Samsung features. You can get OnePlus and have, you know, all those features and eventually some of the Google features too. You know, it's all about choice of hardware on the Android side. And Google is building software that allows OEMs to differentiate their software, but, you know, still be interoperable with one another. Like, we're seeing all these cross-device features that make Android devices work better together. And they talked about some of the new stuff, like, that is coming first on the Galaxy S24 series, but also on Pixel phones. And then they also rolled out the new Quick Share. You know, it's kind of, I feel like this is the strategy that Google is going. They're positioning Android with all these different hardware bits versus just iPhone.
And not just phones, but a new wearable era? Is that where we're at with Samsung right now? I thought it was really interesting at the very end of the announcement.
The ecosystem expands.
Mm-hmm. You thought it was done, and they didn't quite do one more thing with a big brouhaha. In fact, it was really kind of like, interesting because they came out and spent like 5 or 7 minutes on like health stuff and like sleep tracking and all these things like you've kind of heard before and everything. And then they tacked on to the end of it, and coming soon, the Samsung Galaxy Ring, a wearable ring that you put on your finger. And they didn't really even talk about like what the two things that they just discussed had in common, but you could kind of fill in the gaps. And we found since through different interviews with Samsung execs and stuff that it really is meant to be kind of like a health wearable that is essentially a stripped down version of the things that your phone can do already. So, or like I'm wearing the Pixel Watch 2, this could do sleep tracking, but I don't want to wear a watch to bed, so I'm never going to do that. I would consider wearing a ring if it, you know.
I mean, you're already wearing several.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. I even take, that's true. I am wearing two. I do take them off at night. So yeah. maybe that is too far for me, but I'm way more likely to wear a ring that would track my sleep than I would be aware, like a watch. And that kind of sounds like what Samsung is alluding to here. Still pretty light on details, but they say that, you know, it's going to eventually, potentially have the ability to do activity tracking, sleep tracking, and
they're coming after Aura.
I was just going to say, that's what I was going to say. What I think is super interesting, and we were talking about this before when we were prepping for the show, I've actually had more people in the past week ask me about this ring, like in my circle of friends, than I have about the phone themselves. Because this was something different. This was something new to add to the marketplace. And I feel like Aura and the other kind of smart rings that are out there are all startup-y, fringe, somewhat, you know, like early adopter, but Samsung doing a ring, that's like marketplace validation, right? Like that is a wearable that is legitimate, a major company doing a ring, kind of like when Apple did the watch, it legitimizes wearables. I keep an eye on this one. I think it's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think also last week, Amazfit also announced a ring. But I mean, yeah, Aura's been around for a while. I think they've claimed to have sold over 1 million units. Like this was back in 2021. Prince Harry and Kim Kardashian wears them. And so I do think it's like, yeah, going from that kind of high-end elite kind of thing to Samsung. And I mean, you know, if Samsung's going to have K-pop stars wearing tracker rings, but then whenever they come out, end of the year, next year, to see it, and it makes a lot of sense. So we'll see. But guess what? It's not going to be just smart rings that do sleep tracking and fitness tracking. It sounds like Samsung is racing not just Aura, but Apple for a bigger share of, you know, this kind of burgeoning and further growing kind of health smart device market. And Samsung is in fact working on a continuous blood sugar and glucose monitoring and continuous blood pressure monitoring, and basically non-invasive one, because, you know, right now, especially for those of you who probably, you know, live with diabetes, you know that like most of the time glucose monitoring involves very kind of like, you know, intrusive methods, pricking your finger, you know, like blood samples. And so kind of like one of the, you know, kind of grails right now is to find like a non-invasive, you know, device like a ring or some other wearable that can give you that continuous monitoring and to make life easier. I mean, given, you know, how many people in the world have diabetes and the kind of monitoring that needs, it would be a public good, but also probably a gold mine for these companies. Apple is also working on it. They have been working on a non-invasive glucose monitoring for a long time, for almost over a decade now. And they're, you know, both Samsung and Apple have yet to put out products, but they're looking for it, as well as also hypertension monitoring. Interestingly enough, I know we don't cover it on this show, but Apple did recently have some interesting things happen with their hypertension monitoring and patent stuff and Masimo. So given that context, it's going to be very interesting to how this kind of like little glucose war between Apple and Samsung might shape up. But again, it kind of goes along with the, you know, health message that they started. I mean, Galaxy Impact last February had like what, a half an hour dedicated to like this whole health experience. They had some this time. They got a theme and they're going with it. And it's probably going to include glucose monitoring and hypertension monitoring in the future. At least they're working on it.
I got to say, continuous glucose monitoring on like a smartwatch would be just a game changer for so many
would.
People.
It
like,
would be
I know someone, like I asked them, they have a Samsung phone, they have a Samsung watch, they have a Samsung tablet, they have a Samsung PC. And I asked them, like, did you hear the rumors about Apple, you know, integrating glucose monitoring into their Apple Watch? And, like, if that happened, they were the first ones to do it, would you buy an Apple Watch? They said yes. They would sell all their Samsung hardware, and they would get an Apple Watch, and they would get an iPhone.
It matters,
like, it's that important to them.
Yeah, 100%.
And let's hope that Samsung learns from Apple and pays the license fees or has their own patent for it. So,
yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that would be a total game changer. I too know several people with diabetes who have to do all that and beat and do. There's enough people in there that would totally change the sales charts.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, so much from Samsung, but that's not it. In fact, Michelle, you've got some hands-on with one of the devices, so we're going to go deep with that. But we're going to take a little breather from Samsung for a moment, and we're going to check in with the news that you, the loyal patrons of patreon.com/AndroidFaithful, have chosen for us to discuss, in addition to the t-shirt that I showed earlier, and the sticker, and the Discord, and all the ad-free podcasts, all that fun stuff. Every week, any paying supporting member of patreon.com/AndroidFaithful can vote and pick a story for us to talk about on the show. And this week we had an interesting mix of no articles about messages, none. So coming in last was the fact that X or Twitter or Twix, as we like to call it here, started rolling out audio and video calls for Android. That got 20% of the vote, which I thought was interesting, but a little late to the game, Twitter. But there you go. That's probably why I came in last. Coming in second with 29% of the vote was the fact that Google's teasing a new Pixel 8 color for release. And in fact, I believe it came out today, right? The mint color, or they delayed it. I saw some.
Yeah, they delayed it.
They delayed it. Yeah,
it's not out yet. Yeah.
But the winning story that we're going to talk about right now is the fact that WhatsApp is coming out with their own version of Nearby Share. With all the chatter of Google and Samsung, you know, trying to firm up a file sharing standard collaboration, WhatsApp is working on their own Bluetooth file sharing tool for nearby users. So if you're a WhatsApp user and your friend is a WhatsApp user, both users would need to open the share file section of WhatsApp and stay there until the transmission is done. And don't worry, it is end-to-end encrypted. So here's a question. Has the dam broken on the concept of Nearby Share, and this is just now table stakes for any app or anything that's doing it? Like, you know, because my sister's a WhatsApp user, I'm a WhatsApp user, my wife's a WhatsApp user, we got iOS and Android amongst the three of us, we can share files this way through WhatsApp because we're all using it. What do I care if Google or Samsung does it? Like, is WhatsApp the great unifier across different platforms and things like that?
Yeah. I think a lot of people were saying, a lot of people when they first heard this news, like, oh, what are they doing? Why are they releasing yet another file sharing standard? But the fact that WhatsApp is installed on what, like 2 billion?
Billion.
Like, over a billion devices have WhatsApp, both Android and iOS, actually makes it one of the best file sharing services. Just because you don't have AirDrop on Android, you don't have Nearby Share on iOS. So how are you going to share files? You just open WhatsApp.
Yep.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, and it also probably speaks to the fact that, like, worldwide WhatsApp is such a big deal. Here in the U.S., not so much, because, as you all know, we end up talking about RCS and, you know, standard messaging and all that kind of stuff here, but so many other parts of the world, WhatsApp is what they use, you know, everyone, and it's just such a huge deal that having a feature like this might make more sense outside of the U.S. than it makes inside the U.S.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a loud and proud WhatsApp user. It has allowed me to connect with people across the aisle on iOS for years now. I've got several active chats going with it, you know, and ways to connect with my friends. Like I mentioned, my wife is on an iOS device. I'm on Android. It would be a great way for us to share files that way. I think it's great. And Michelle, I'm with you. I don't blame WhatsApp at all for doing this. I think WhatsApp to me feels like, of all the things Meta has done over the years, WhatsApp is like the stealth Trojan horse, like, acquisition that they paid for. They got a ton of users, they got international platform acceptance, and they, whatever they're doing with this team that's doing WhatsApp features, are just doing it quietly, and you don't get a lot of noise from Facebook or anything like that. It just kind of rolls on its own. And WhatsApp is this little powerhouse that I think is a super, it's honestly, it's in my, like, new phone, set up the phone, top five apps to install, WhatsApp is in the top five, hands down, every time. So
I will say I have literally used WhatsApp to exchange video files, which are not small, with my iPhone friends. I think it's worth to note that the transfer limit is 5 gigabytes. That's huge. That's awesome. Yep. I think even like Nearby Share, you're limited to like 5 gigabytes total a day, or and 1 gigabyte per file. I'm not 100% sure on that. So they are giving you like it's very flexible. I will say though, WhatsApp, please don't make it so that both people have to keep that screen up.
Yes,
because Nearby Share does work in the background. You can make it work in the background. So just do that, and then I'll be happy.
Yeah, both people keeping it open during the transfer. If you're doing a 5 gig video file, you're just
like holding the phone out.
But
other than that, I agree. I do think this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
go WhatsApp.
Hear, hear. 2024, the year of Nearby Share.
The year of peer-to-peer file sharing.
It's 3 weeks into the year. It's the year of Nearby Share.
What year is it? So,
for the very first
time. Funny you say that, because they're going to be rebranding it next week.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, that was our patron pick. Thank you all the patrons at patreon.com/androidfaithful. Go sign up there. Get in on the action. It is awesome. We thank everybody for doing it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
But now, the moment we've all been waiting for. Michelle, you have brand new hardware in hand. Tell us all about the Galaxy S24 that you got.
I do. And let me actually switch my camera over to... There you go. Bear with me if things look a little janky. First time doing this. But I have in hand the Galaxy S24 Ultra. I got it from Samsung while it unpacked. And this is my first time using like one of their smartphones, my daily driver, in a long time. You know, I had their Z Fold 5 for quite a bit. And I kind of got a little tired of how heavy and chunky that was. And personally, I'm not that big of a fan of how sharp the corners are on this phone, but I do love the in-hand feel. It definitely feels very sleek. The titanium gray color you can see here, it looks really nice. And I'm really loving the software features that they unveiled with it. One UI 6.1 just has so much going on in it. It's kind of overwhelming, to be honest. But before I get into that, just wanted to bring up, like, a lot of people have been asking about the Corning Gorilla Glass armor, that coating they added onto it, and the light reflectance, and I can say it really does make a big difference in terms of how much light is reduced when you like have a light source shining on the phone. If you put it side by side with another phone, it really does make a difference, like in terms of how much is reflected.
Does that cut down at all on the kind of perceived brightness of the display when you're looking at it in person?
I haven't noticed that. I don't think it does. Like, good. They do advertise that it gets up to 2600 nits of brightness, and I haven't been able to test that. It's been really cloudy and dark lately, so I can't go outside and actually have it crank up to that max, because you have to have auto brightness on and it has to detect the sunlight and so on. But other than that, the phone has been very fast and snappy. It has a Snapdragon 8 Gen 3. The Ultra model has that globally. Battery life, I haven't had it long enough to actually tell you if that's, you know, good or not. But now I think what you've all been waiting for is a demo of some of the new AI features and the new features that they announced at Unpacked. So the first thing I want to show off is Circle to Search. So this is a feature that lets you long press on the home button or the gesture nav handle to invoke Google Lens over your screen. So I'm going to do it right here. There you go. So I'm going to draw a circle over this. Like, let's say I want to search this up. And that's the Pixar like logo thing. Like, that's the Pixar HQ. And you can basically do this onto anything. Like, on any screen you're at, you can just long press on the handle, select something, scribble on something, and then it'll just search it on Google Lens. Like, you can do this on any Android phone already, right? You can just open Google Lens and then tap search my screen. But this just takes like one step out of it. Just makes it so quick to search for anything on your screen. And this is available right now out of the box on the S24 series. And it's coming to the Pixel 8 series on January 31st. So the next feature I want to show off is a feature you already are probably familiar with in... let's see. I'm going to tap this AI feature. So if you have the Google Photos app and you're already familiar with the Magic Editor feature, the Magic Eraser, basically the same thing. I'm going to draw over this guy right here, just have it select it, and then I'm going to touch and hold, and I can just erase myself, and then I can generate and fill in the image. And this is being run in the cloud, so it takes a few seconds because it's using generative AI to fill in the gaps of where the object, in this case, me, used to be.
So we're not at the point yet where that is happening on device.
I can't zoom in, but if you look pretty closely, I'm gone. I'm not in the image anymore.
Wow.
Is your shadow there? It's not a big deal. I'm just curious.
I don't know that it is.
Kind of. You can kind of see it, yeah.
That's still amazing, yeah. I'm just curious.
Yeah. And then there's also a straighten feature. So I think if I do this, so if I go back to this feature, like if I want to straighten this, right? You see, like when you're adjusting the rotation of an image, right? You lose a lot of the details that are on the outside because your photo is just physically not there. So what this does is when you straighten it, it uses generative AI to fill in the gaps around the outside. So like it'll magically fill in, not magically, of course, with AI, fill in what it thinks should be on the outside and just add scenery that actually isn't there to make it look like you have it there. And it might look a little janky, but if you have like, especially nature scenes, it might work pretty well.
God, I wonder at what point, like it, you know, because this is a very recognizable shot of a very recognizable place. I wonder at what point it would be able to reference other photos of that area and then generate around what it knows to be there. You know, that's really interesting.
Okay, and this one is really cool. This is a feature where it uses frame interpolation. So I have a photo of someone dancing at like the San Francisco airport, I think, or was it? I don't remember where. But here, like you can see, I just recorded it in like native 60 frames per second. But if I go back a little bit, sorry, I'm gonna go back. But if I didn't record this in slow-mo, right? This is just like a 60 frames per second video. But if I press and hold. It's like interpolating frames in real time and making it look like as if I had taken a slow-mo video.
I also like the feedback of when you did that, how the little white flash that went over it to show you that it was doing something. Yeah. Like that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Wow, that was smooth.
Yeah, yeah.
But does it save it?
I think you can. I don't know like how to do it, but I think it can. And just two more quick things I want to show you is in the Notes app, if you have a bunch of notes and it's just all a mess, like these are just some notes I took of my experience with One UI 6, there's this new AI feature that lets you automatically format it. Let's say I want to do headers and bullets. So I have like a whole bunch of bullet points of things I noted about One UI.
Oh my gosh.
They're not organized at all. And it's going to use a large language model. I think this is on device.
And look at that. It's just like formatting and I have different options.
That Whoa. I love. And the different love options it. Is pretty
Do meeting cool. notes. Oh, do meeting notes. I want to see the
Oh my
one.
Gosh, yes.
Let's see.
Oh man. Auto format. So useful.
Selection was too long. Auto format. Meeting notes. Let's try that.
I'm just curious what the difference between, you know, this is so cool. This AI stuff is so cool, man. It's figuring it out. All right, so it's similar, basically. Yeah.
And then the other one was the summarize feature.
And summarize your own like notes.
A quick, yeah, a couple of summarize my own notes, right? Yeah. And then briefly, you have the same thing with the voice recorder app. So I'm just doing a quick live demonstration recording with my voice in the voice recorder app, similar to the Pixel Recorder app on the Pixel phones.
Yeah, that was and one question I had was whether it was the same or different. Looks like it's different.
So save it here. And it doesn't do real-time transcriptions like on the Pixel phone, but you just quickly tap transcribe, and then it'll just analyze it on device using the Gemini Nano model. And you have a transcript here, and then you have a summary. Well, it was too short for to summarize, but you get the picture.
Yeah, there's your summary and right
that's
there.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's it. That's like I've only had this for a few days. I'm really loving it. I'm going to be having it for the next couple of months, really getting a feel for One UI 6.1. and all the features that it has going for it, but really loving my experience with the phone so far.
And that is the Ultra, is that right? That's the one that you got?
Yes.
Yeah.
The S24
okay, so you've got
Ultra.
The titanium build.
Titanium.
Build quality.
Ooh. Yep.
Yeah, it looks nice. I'm a huge fan of the Ultra series. When they have their Ultra devices, I almost always really like them. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And if you didn't catch the announcement, the S24 starts at $799, S24 Plus at $999, and the Ultra at $1299, and pre-orders are open now, and then it goes on sale on January 31st.
Ultra from $549.99 with eligible trade-in. Samsung's been really good with trade-in values
trade-in
in the past.
Deals, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely check that out.
I've been silent up to this point, but so many holes. If you've got that fear of holes thing, man, it is like five holes there and the two there, right? The one on the pinhole, right? So many holes.
Oh, I guess there were some questions we had on Patreon. I could answer some of those.
Yes,
briefly.
So we posted to Patreon last week saying, hey, Michelle's got the device. What questions do you got? So we wanted to kind of in advance wanted to get some questions. So Michelle, first question came from Joe Furness, who says, would like to know how the circle to search works and how it will work on the Pixel 8 series.
Right, so circle to search, there are two parts to it. There's a new gesture that's baked into Android that allows you to long press on the gesture handle. And then that invokes a new screen within the Google app. That's the actual circle to search screen. So there's technically nothing really limiting this feature from being made available on other devices, except for the fact that you need some updated Android code to make it possible to long press the gesture handle, because that's not part of stock Android right now. But that's basically how it's going to work on Samsung phones. That's how it works on the Pixel 8. And eventually, hopefully, when this rolls out to other devices, that's how it'll work as well. And then a similar question we had from Peter Keefe, who was interested on from the dev perspective, if they have to do anything to support circle to search. And the answer is no. This is just going to work on any screen, because you're basically, the Google app has enough privileges to be able to basically take an image of the screen, and then whatever you're drawing is going to use optical character recognition or just some, you know, machine learning algorithm to identify images that you're circling. Basically what already Pixel phones have been doing whenever you swipe up to the recents menu and it automatically detects text and images. It's basically doing that on any screen and then searching through it with Google Lens. And then the question from Sergio T asking about the anti-glare screen in person. As I just mentioned, it is very good. It definitely does make a noticeable difference. It reduces light reflectance. And then they also asked, does it seem like Google accepted Samsung as a premium Android manufacturer? I think the answer is a quite resounding yes, considering how much of a presence they were.
I don't know. I mean, like, so Sergio asked, does it seem like Google accepted Samsung as the premium Android manufacturer? I don't know if it's like a matter of needing to accept it or not, rather that Google is partnering and supporting Samsung, right? Like, it's you know, like, I mean, it'd be one thing if they showed up at the OnePlus 12 event with Circle to Search, and they didn't, right? But I don't think this is like Google anointing Samsung as the king of Android devices,
or Google, like, I would agree.
They've been partnering, if anything, behind the scenes for many years. I've been on calls where Google is, you know, helps Samsung with partner experiences. Like, they're tight. They know where the bread is buttered, and they have known for a long time. And it behooves them as a platform to support their biggest OEM. And so I agree. They know that they're a huge partner. They've still been making their own phones. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but I don't think it's necessarily that, you know, they're giving up any territory to Samsung. It's just they're being more open and using that partnership in a more open marketing kind of forward way. Having a friend of the show, Hiroshi, on the stage. I was very surprised. Like, oh, it's a Hiroshi just popped up.
I audibly yelped when I'm like, Hiroshi. Jason, I was watching your live stream on it with your coverage of it, and I was like, yikes. So, yeah. that was fun.
What would Hiroshi say? I don't know.
And very briefly, there was one more question we had from Tom Shrek, who asked, how many of the AI features will make it to the old devices? And Samsung did mention at the keynote that, actually it was on like a footnote during the keynote, that a lot of the Galaxy AI features will be coming to the S23 series, the Z Flip 5, the Z Fold 5, and the Tab S9 series sometime in the first half of 2024. They didn't specify a date, and they didn't specify exactly which AI features will be coming. They just did confirm that at least some of them will be coming to their existing devices.
Cool. All right, so Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra overall review at the end of the day, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up? Two thumbs up? One thumbs up?
Two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. Wow.
Looks great to me.
All right, Michelle.
To get my hands on one.
Very cool. Well, thank you for your service.
Oh my gosh, Michelle. You worked real hard in the last couple of weeks. Yeah. Holy crap.
Right on. Well, that Samsung wasn't the only phone that launched a device recently, right, Wynn?
No. And another OEM we've been talking about quite a bit for a while now is OnePlus. And so guess what? You're going to get, if you're not a Samsung 24 type of person, you can get the OnePlus 12. It has launched. It is global launch day is here, basically. The device is actually very similar to the one that was released already in China. There are some restrictions and provisos, the opposite of an addendum. The device is very similar to the Chinese version, except that there is no 24 gigabyte RAM option, which I guess makes sense because, my goodness, 24 gigs of RAM in a phone. And there's no white colorway, but you will be getting more or less the OnePlus 12. The starting price in the U.S. is going to be $799 for the 12-gigabyte version with 256 gigabytes of storage, and $899 for the 16-gigabyte version with 512 gigabytes of storage. Pre-orders are available now, and devices should be available on February 6th. Something that is novel, though, is Best Buy actually will be selling devices in store. This is, like, I think, the first time OnePlus is doing it. So you can pre-order from OnePlus.com, Best Buy, or Amazon, or, you know, eventually just walk on down to your Best Buy and have the, what do they call them over there? The, I don't know, Geek Squad
Geek
or somebody.
Squad, yeah.
Geek Squad, yeah. Help you out. There is a trade-in program as well, all kinds of kind of deals. Actually, something to note that if you are super interested, pre-orders will also automatically get the 512 gigabyte model, which again is $799 for the lower price of, sorry, if you pre-order, you can get the 512 gigabyte $899 version for the other price, $799. So, yeah, and also they're throwing in a free wireless charger. So outside of the U.S., the OnePlus 12 will be available around early February, no solid date, in most countries, including India. And then not to just like leave it at that, along with the OnePlus, we also have the OnePlus 12R. Unlike other manufacturers, OnePlus prefers an R for the mid-range, not an A, so an R. And we do have some information about the OnePlus 12R. So this mid-ranger is going to come in at $499 USD. It's rocking the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 and has, you know, 8 or 16 gigabytes of RAM with 128 or 256 gigabytes of storage for that. 6.78 inch AMOLED, up 220 hertz refresh rate with a LPTO 4.0 at HDR10 plus. I had to look up what LPTO was, and LPTO stands for low temperature polycrystalline oxide. It's basically just a fancy backplane technology for OLED displays, which allows for dynamic refresh rates. TIL, there you go. It's got a large, very large battery at 5,500 milliamps, an 80-watt Super Voke charger, 31 minutes to 100% charge. Zoom. Your pre-orders can start today. And hey, if you got your OnePlus 12 or your OnePlus 12R and you need some things in your ears to go with them, namely earbuds, the OnePlus Buds 3 are going to be available for $99 starting February 13th. They have active noise canceling for up to 49 decibels. And when that active noise canceling is active, it is up to 10 hours of battery life. Without active noise canceling, you're going to get 10 hours of battery life. With, you're going to get 6.5 hours of battery life. And then with the case total, you'll get about 44 hours of work out of those buds. There is fast charge support, LHDC 5.0 Bluetooth support. And yeah, there you go. There's your OnePlus part of the ecosystem, or part of the OnePlus ecosystem, coming at you in February with the OnePlus, OnePlus R, and the OnePlus Buds 3.
So I want to back up to the OnePlus 12. There was a lot of stuff to dive in. And Jason, I don't know if you can pull back up the OnePlus 12 page for our video viewers that are watching it, but I will say, as a vocal not indifferent to wireless charging or whatever, I got to say, I saw that wireless charging base that they have, and I was like, ooh, that looks nice.
It's very OnePlus plus brandy.
It's got the red cable, and yeah, it's got a nice little white stand that the phone can prop up on. I got to admit,
I think that's the same wireless charging base, the 50-watt wireless charging base they had with the OnePlus 9.
Oh, I was going to say, their wireless charging bases have evolved over the years, and then this looks very familiar to me.
Yeah.
Maybe a little different.
I have one of those. I think it's the same one.
Maybe they got the design right. Michelle, can you send me yours? Because I like it.
I remember at one point it was so chonky that it had a fan on the inside.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think you need it if you're charging wirelessly at 50 watts.
Yeah. Yeah. But good to see them embrace the wireless charging, though, right? That's what everybody's criticism was.
That's everyone's number one favorite thing to pick on them for. So they're like, nah.
Very cool. I'm excited. I want to get my hands on this phone. I'm loving the OnePlus Essence that we're going through. I think they're doing very cool. I got to tell you, we are I feel like it's a bevy of phone, a bountiful harvest of phones over the past 6 months, but going from the Pixel Fold to the OnePlus Open to the Pixel 8 Pro to the now Samsung Galaxy S24 to the OnePlus 12. Like, these are solid phones.
Yeah, and we'll probably get a new bevy of foldables and flippables in a few months, probably something like that. And then who knows what's going to be happening at Google I/O.
Well, speaking of that, coming up, I mean, the treadmill never stops. But Mobile World Congress 2024 is right around the corner, and OnePlus is expected to be present at the good old Mobile World Congress 2024 with a wearable. The rumor is currently that the OnePlus Watch 2 might appear next month at Mobile World Congress. It was intended to launch with the OnePlus 12 today, according to a source that Android Authority had. The next version is expected to run Wear OS. The previous version of the watch did not. So really interesting if we'll see it in a month. You know, why they held it back, who knows? If it comes out at World War Congress or doesn't, time will tell. We'll have to see it. But also in the wearables area of rumors, the Pixel Watch 3, nice little rumor that somewhere Flo is screaming happily. Yeah. there might be some size variants to the Pixel Watch 3. It wouldn't just be one size, rather a large and a small. So the two sizes would be a 41 millimeter as before, and then something larger. So not
small. I kind
of
would have expected that with the Pixel Watch 2. I was kind of surprised when it was a single smaller size.
But that is a real issue. I tried to give my sister my Pixel Watch 2, and she could use it. Like, she's a stay-at-home mom running after my niece. Too big. She got small wrists. What do? I'm with you, Flo.
So wait, the Pixel Watch 2 was too big for her wrist? Oh, so then I wonder... I think this leak is saying this would be the small size.
That's the small size. Yeah. Yep.
And that sorry,
the
other
and there would be an even larger size for people.
Oh
with
no! Sorry. Okay. Well. Yeah. Sorry, babe. Yeah, no Pixel watches for you. Yeah. Maybe we should just get a little tissue or something just to kind of stuff under there.
Time will tell.
Dang it.
If a wearable company can figure out to make a women's size smaller watch, I know there would be legions, you know, that would be.
Really, y'all? Like,
yeah. I know.
Just nature, right? Smaller bones. Come on, help us out.
It's not hard. Yeah, it's well, Jason, speaking of Pixel rumors, there's some more Pixel rumors, right?
Well, yeah. So we've got, I'll go ahead and throw it on the stage here. We've got renders, apparently, of the Pixel 9 Pro, courtesy of MySmartPrice collaborating with OnLeaks to show these renders. And so here, I'll go ahead and pull up the little rotating animation thing so you can all see it. So just take a gander at least at this stage of the game. It is early, obviously. So, you know, lots of things could change if these are, in fact, you know, legitimate. But you can see the camera bump. Definitely different, right? It's no longer a bar that goes edge to edge. It's more like a pill shape extended out. I'll go ahead and replay that again. The edges of the device itself, a little flatter. We're kind of used to seeing those a little curvier. Like in this shot, it really does kind of have a little bit of that like traditional iPhone kind of quality to it as far as the edges are concerned. A flatter design all around, it seems like. So some of the curviness kind of going away.
It looks like, yeah, a little heuristic or whatever that is. Do you remember when like the whole design premise, although it does remind, I mean, I don't like the flatness, but it does remind me of the folded Pixel Fold.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well, that would make sense, right? Like right? Maybe the Pixel Fold was yeah, you're right. You're right. Does the Pixel Fold have the round, this...
It's not as round. Sorry, I was on mute. It is not as round, but it doesn't go edge to edge.
Yep.
And my, okay. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. This looks like an evolution of the Pixel Fold.
It's like a Pixel Fold, and they just really curved it around.
Yep.
See, I never got any time with the Pixel Fold. That is a boat that ship that I missed.
Well, you were at I/O. We got to hold it at I/O, but you didn't get to play with it.
Yeah, I mean I didn't get to live with it. Same with the Open. Like these are devices that I've heard so many Open. People talk about.
I love my Open so much, and I want to use it as the daily driver. Jason, I probably should. If I see you this week, I should just give it to you to at least get some time with, because I'm not using it as a daily driver I'm just like afraid to jump off the Pixel side of it. So maybe we'll do that, and that'll give you some time with the foldable.
Give it a good home run.
Yeah, but I love it so much. Whether
they're going to keep the temperature sensor.
Oh, that was another thing that I thought was pretty funny. Looking at it, it was like, I mean, they're not keeping the temperature sensor. Okay, show of hands. Has anyone here ever legitimately thought like, oh, this would be a perfect opportunity for the temperature sensor, and then used it?
No. Well, no, because it's not done. You can't, because the temperature sensor, I will tell you, the temperature sensor, the only reason why I want it is I want to hold it in front of my kid's head and tell me what my kid's temperature is, and it is not cleared by the FDA to do it. Right.
And
so if they're not going to include the temperature sensor on the next phone, that is the indicator that the FDA is not letting them do it. That's my guess, is that they didn't get government approval or whatever they need in order for it, because that is the only application for a temperature sensor.
I mean, and it had to have been the primary reason that they even went that direction to begin with, you know. Yeah.
Rick Osterloh said that you could use it to like measure the temperature of a pan on your stove.
I can hold my hand above the pan and know it's hot, Rick. I can feel hot, Rick. I'm cool.
I'm gonna put a $1,000 device near.
I'm sooner just gonna hold my hand over. Oh, that's hot. Yeah. So, Rick, come on. All right. Well, so that was a lot of hardware, but doesn't mean we're not gonna stop there, because we got some apps to talk about. And when before the show, you were showing us your crazy keyboard. It's not as crazy as Gboard, though. What's going on with Gboard?
No, Gboard's getting some upgrades, and not just Gboard, but kind of in the theme of making assistants and AI and all that kind of stuff more of an integral part of your day. I actually really like this feature. So Gboard, specifically Gboard for Pixel tablet, as it looks right now, is kind of doing a better UI integration with the Google Assistant voice typing. So Google Assistant voice tapping, it is typing. It's not tapping. Google Assistant voice typing is a feature where you can obviously, you know, enable voice to text using your keyboard. Now, if you have used it, you know that the normal way to get there is to open your keyboard, hit the little microphone, and start talking. Or you can say, "Hey, hot word for the G person, type." So rather than doing that, when that is activated, sorry, there's a couple stories here. When that is activated, and if you're on kind of a larger screen device, namely the Pixel tablet, rather than having the whole keyboard there while you're kind of using the Google Assistant typing experience, they're now working on an optimized experience where rather than having the whole keyboard, you're going to have a kind of minimized toolbar, like a pill bar at the bottom, so that you can actually see more of your screen when voice typing, which makes a lot of sense, right? If I'm not using my keyboard, why not have all that real estate back so I can actually, you know, see what is being typed? And in the toolbar that remains, you'll get, you know, kind of some access to other things. There's going to be an overflow menu with settings, like more voice commands, you know, clipboard and translate and stuff like that. There's going to be another button to disable both this Google Assistant typing and to show the full keyboard again. And this overflow menu is going to be enabled from the keyboard with a new little pill button on the right when Google Assistant typing is activated. So you're going to be able to switch between the traditional experience of keyboard up while you're voice typing and then new sexy pill bar as your assistant voice typing. So yes, 9to5 Google spotted it on their Pixel tablet, not their Pixel Fold. So we'll see the actual scope of this, but it's basically just, you know, again, kind of leveraging Google Assistant already and kind of making the UI kind of fit this more, you know, assistant-y, voicey world that we live in. And to go with that is seamless voice typing. So as I mentioned before, usually when you access voice to type with Gboard, you kind of have to go through a two-step process where you hit a button, where you bring the keyboard, you hit a button, and then you activate voice typing. There will be a new feature, it seems, that 9to5 Google's APK Insight team spotted called seamless voice typing. Basically, if your keyboard is shown and you enable the feature, your voice typing will just start automatically when it hears you, you know, dictating to it. So there, you know, there's no longer a two-step process. It's just going to be, okay, I'm in typing mode. So whether I'm typing or, you know, dictating, Google is trying to make it easier for you to do that. It's going to be optional in the settings and remain exclusive to Google phones for now. But yeah, ways to make typing easier, or at least make voice-to-text typing easier on your Gboards. So
the seamless thing, I've got my Pixel tablet. I'm going to go going through its paces with this. I'm going to keep a lookout for it and see if I could use it for the assistant. But the seamless voice typing, if it's anything like the seamless conversations with assistant on the Nest Hub and stuff like that, it's going to be fraught with disaster.
I'm so dubious of it, dude.
The number of times assistant interrupts a conversation because it thinks I'm talking to it and I'm not which I'm glad that A, the keyboard needs to be active and you need to switch this on. But even then, I could be typing something and doing something while I'm in a conversation with somebody else. Like that there's so many opportunities for that to mess up.
Yeah. How many times are we actually just in typing mode, like as people using phones?
I mean, I would say a percentage of the time. I mean, like if I'm alone in my office and I'm typing and I'm doing something, like that makes sense. But like, if I'm out in a social situation, if I'm out in public, or if I'm in the kitchen talking to my wife or whatever it might be, like it's not 100% of the time, and there's no way the device will ever know. And I'm glad they're doing these things to enable really cool features that sound great on paper in a very specific use case or situation. And unfortunately, the question is whether or not the value of that use case is valuable in that moment or frustrating not in that moment. And that's a balance.
Yeah. Just to clarify, I don't think seamless voice typing is going to be dependent on like you actually start talking and then it'll switch to the voice mode. I think this setting just makes it so that when you like open the keyboard, it'll automatically switch to the voice typing mode.
Well, correct, right? But I could open the keyboard and not want it to be voice typing.
Yeah, like I'm typing and I'm talking to my husband over my shoulder.
It's got to be something you got to. It's a toggle. It's going to be a toggle in the Gboard settings.
So the question is how many times? So I toggle it on, and then 3 weeks later, I forget I toggle it on, and I go to respond to a text message while I'm in the middle of a conversation, and it just gets nonsense, and like, and I toggle it off, and I never use it again. Like that's what could happen.
And that's the point, though. It's supposed to be less like friction to get to this feature, but it'll cause friction in other ways, or just, you know, I don't know. It's a nice idea.
Have faith they can pull it off. Come on.
No.
All right. I'm rooting for them. So, well, what else can they pull off, Jason?
I don't know. What else can they pull off? Oh, yeah, it probably has something to do with artificial intelligence. So let's see here. Bard coming to Google Messages. That's not necessarily... Is that news? Is this the first time that we're hearing that Bard might come to Google Messages? Because I feel like it's going everywhere. Anyways, 9to5 Google spotted code. that Bard would be able to do things like draft messages, identify images, suggest books by genre, offer recipes, basically anything Bard can do. The news here being that essentially within your Google Messages experience, the way that you would normally fire up a conversation with another person, you will also be able to, according to 9to5 Google's code sleuthing, fire up a conversation with Bard. So messages would become another conduit for Bard integration. And I guess just think of it as through the lens of, like, if Bard were a person, you'd go in there to ask that person a question. And that seems to be the kind of thought here.
Anything you can do, Bard can do better.
although it does kind of, you know, they do point out the reference to Allo and, you know, Allo's kind of integration of assistant into the chat experience. And this feels very familiar in that regard.
I mean, it all feels like a rerun, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, wow. Like
it's Redux. It's 2.0.
I mean, so many other messaging apps let you talk to the chatbot. Like, yeah. I think Facebook Messenger has that. Snapchat has that, and now just Google's
that's true. Yeah. And then another kind of piece of this is this rebranding potential. 9to5 Google, you know, reminded us that Assistant with Bard was part of the Pixel 8 event announcement. It was called Assistant with Bard. And at least up to 2 weeks ago, the onboarding for Bard on mobile still called it Assistant with Bard, but the new Google app 15.2 code shows it's reworded to, hi, I'm Bard, which I suppose is better than Assistant without all those features we just killed because we laid off part of the team. I mean, but anyways.
Does anyone else think that the clock is ticking on the Assistant branding?
Oh,
probably.
It
I mean,
seems that way.
Yeah, they're killing stuff off of it, moving it.
Right. We reported it last year when they moved so many people onto the Bard team. It was Bard, Bard, Bard. Like, we're going to retire Assistant. Everything's just going to be Bard.
Right? Yeah. Assistant is walking. What a
do you
slow...
do? You think Assistant or Bard is a better branding?
Bard.
Right now.
It's funny. We're being critical here, saying, "Oh, do you think they're gonna get rid of Assistant?" I've never thought Assistant was good branding for it. I think Bard gives it that Siri like identity or
one
branding,
syllable.
Or,
snappy,
one syllable. You know, I'll ask Bard. Like, it's fine. Like, you know, but at some point, it's all nonsense. What I mean is, Bard better than Bixby or Siri? I don't know. I mean, I think they're better than Assistant personally, but that's just me.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I would agree.
It's just a constant shuffling and back and forth, and like just never know what to call anything anymore. It's a shuffle. It's a branding shuffle.
The old Android shuffle. I love it. Right? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, one last note on apps. This is near and dear to my heart as a hardcore user of Google Photos. One of my biggest complaints is the fact that it's a mess. That I just have scrolls and scrolls and scrolls and scrolls of pictures. Especially when you're trying to get enough pictures of your kids to use Best Take to get smiles out of them. Which, by the way, I've been using more and more, and I'm getting fantastic results. So I'm very happy.
Yeah, there
with
you
that.
Go.
But this is a feature that was available on Google Photos in iOS and is now coming to Android finally. And we've already heard about it a little. It's called Photo Stacks. And basically what it's going to do is it's going to take groups of similar photos into stacks. So if you got, 100 photos of your kids playing outside, it'll collapse them into one stack. All photos taken at a similar time. Google will determine the top pick for the top of the stack. We'll also call out the number of photos that are in the stack. And it only works if backup feature is turned on, which I haven't turned on. And it is a server side push. So I think it's great. It tidies it up. Lets me, add a layer into, like I've got the 15 minutes I was playing outside with the kids and taking pictures into a stack. I can dive deeper to find the pics I want from that. So I'm all for this. So this is cool. So,
I mean, I love that this was announced, I think, two months ago, and now it's finally starting to roll out just quietly.
Yeah. But I'll take it. So
love it. This is the kind of stuff that I love generative AI for.
What I would like a little more from Google Photos, especially with Best Take and all the AI stuff that's in there, is some sort of visual distinction between an original versus a edited photo, which they don't always, it's not apparent in that scrolling kind of situation. Like, I did a best take, and then I got distracted, and now I'm trying to find it, and it just drops it in the batch of everything that you've got. Like, I want to know, this is the, like, give the little sparkle around it, or give the little icon or something on it, so I know.
Yeah, and actually, to that end, it's kind of surprising that Google doesn't, and makes me think that probably eventually they will, because there is this kind of movement right now to essentially mark up when something has been, you know, created with some sort of generative AI. And I know that Google supports that as well. I'd be really surprised if that didn't make its way in there to some degree. Because that is a total pain when you just have this sea of images. And you're like, wait a minute, where did that thing go that I just, you know, created? It's somewhere in here. Now I got to open them all up and look closely at the faces to make sure.
Funny that you mentioned that, Jason, because that's something I forgot to mention about the S24 series. Whenever you edit one of those photos the generative AI feature, it adds a little watermark on the bottom left. People find out you can easily get rid of it, I guess, but like, it does add that watermark and it is there. And in the gallery app, there's even like a tag that says edited with generative AI.
I was gonna show the most recent example of a best take photo I took of my kids, but it's my kids in the bath, and I realized that I don't want the video to get flagged in any way, shape, or form. There was nothing visible, but better safe than sorry.
Better safe than sorry. It also just seems like a marketing opportunity for them, just to highlight, hey, look how amazing this photo turned out.
Right.
It was edited with best take. You know, kind of dual purpose of both being good AI using citizens and also marketing.
Oh. Well, I mean, I can't remember if I told it on this show or not, but I had the perfect use case for best take when my daughter's soccer team was done and they all lined up, the girls lined up to get their photo taken. And I just took like 10 pictures and I went back and looked and not one of them was perfect. But I used best take and I got the perfect one and I sent it out. And they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. So it was like the perfect use case.
Too funny. Okay. All right. Well, those are all the apps stories that we're talking about. Before we're going to wrap up the show, we want to hear from you, everybody out there. And did you know that you can email us at contact@androidfaithful.com? But if you are a member of Patreon, you could also send us a message on Patreon. So go to patreon.com/androidfaithful and you could send us a note that way. We receive messages in that mailbox too. And in fact, that's our first message for tonight, comes from Patreon. So Michelle, why don't you take it away?
All right, our first message comes from Alpan from London, and they had a question for us. In your last show, you discussed Samsung falling into second place in units sold worldwide, whereas Apple's market share keeps on growing. I'm a huge Pixel fan, and my question is, how aggressive do you think Google will be in pushing for a larger market share over the next few years? I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on how invested you think Google actually are in producing Pixel hardware in the long term, knowing how easily Google can pivot and how easily they kill software/hardware products. Thank you. And thank you for writing in to us, Alpan from London. There's a lot of people saying, like, looking at this hardware event that Samsung recently had last week and saying, oh, is Google actually committed to the Pixel lineup? Like, what's the deal here? And as I mentioned, I think they have a multi-pronged strategy because they are competing versus iPhone/iOS. And it's not just with their own Pixel hardware they're using to compete with. It's all of Android devices. Any device that runs Android is in Google's strategy to compete against iPhone/iOS.
I don't know. I mean, the fact that they're offering 7-year support for Pixel devices shows that they're in it for at least the next 7 years.
Yeah,
right?
So, that's true.
I think they're willing
to support the current crop for it.
And I feel like Alpan, your question is one that, you know, Jason, I know you and I have talked about since the Nexus line. Right. Whereas, is Google a hardware company or are they a software company with some hardware and that sort of thing? And they kind of play both sides in the middle. I don't think Google, personally, I don't think even at this state and time, I don't think Google is chasing hardware dominance of the Samsung, Apple like. And Michelle, to your point, they want Android to have that dominance. But whether it's Android across Pixels, Samsung, OnePlus, Huawei, all the other ones that are, or maybe not Huawei, but all the other ones that are out there, they'll accept that. And I think the Pixel just becomes this nice kind of reference device corner of the universe of like, well, this is how we prefer to see it roll out. And you could be part of the Pixel experience or not. I don't know. That's my thought.
And I mean, not for nothing, but we're at 8 pixels now. Like, that's, you know, eight solid years of Google committing itself to something. That's pretty impressive.
So, I don't know if you ever heard, I didn't say, hey, G, but my Google Pixel tablet woke up and it just said, I don't know, but I found these search results and it's giving me a Reddit article saying, what is the selling point of each phone brand from the Android Reddit? So Google's trying to get involved in this conversation either way.
Yeah, Google's like, oh, but can I get a word in? And y'all are talking about me. Can I say something?
Anyway, it's too funny.
All right, Wynn, I think you got the next one.
I do. And the next one is from Chad in San Antonio. In your January 16th episode, y'all said it would be cool to use a smartwatch to control a computer with AR glasses for the output. I've been craving this ever since Project Soli was announced. I dream of a future where I can have a computer in my pocket, Soli on my wrist, AR in my glasses, and be fully productive without ever needing a desk, monitor, keyboard, or mouse. Chad in San Antonio.
So I love this email, Chad, because it's been a hot topic with the Apple Vision Pro coming out and people doing it, like the idea of the infinite canvas. And we're talking about it with the Be Real X. What was Michelle that you saw at CES?
The X Real.
X Real. Yeah, I won't call X Ray Specs, but that's a band. I was talking about it to some of my friends this week. I am all in on the glasses as the display. Like we talked about last week with Adam. Like I want this too. Like I want a new interface and I want it to be XR. You know, or AR related, like, let me put on some glasses like Ender's Game and have a, you know, just have all my displays in front of me. Sign me up. Whatever I got to do.
I think one peripheral that's going to be hard to do away with is a keyboard. Like, I don't know if you've been keeping up with the Apple Vision Pro, like early impressions. A lot of people have been saying that typing on the virtual keyboard is terrible. And that if you want to get any actual work done, you need a keyboard.
Yeah.
So I don't see any way we're going to get around that unless like voice typing becomes good.
What about, and Michelle, this might be dating you. This might be dating you because you're younger and that's okay. I'm not holding against you. But when we were kids, there was something called the Nintendo Power Glove.
Sorry. Right?
And it had a keyboard along the side. Like... Just saying, maybe Johnny Mnemonic was right, or that whole period of 90s tech kind of thing. Like, give me a compact keyboard. But yeah, I mean, I'm with. In all seriousness, you're right, Michelle. They're gonna need to figure out typing, and maybe it's voice typing. But honestly, like. We were talking before we went live with the show. Like I'm in the market for new monitors and stuff like that. Imagine if I didn't need monitors. I could still use my physical keyboard, but I have just these glasses as my monitor. That I would love that. That would be so cool. So,
God, can you imagine as a developer typing with your voice?
No. It'd be awful.
Give me the power. Torture.
Can you dictate code? I mean, you could. I mean, you could say, right? Like,
oh, wow. If that then sounds like torture.
For I equals yada yada, then do this.
I feel like you'd quickly go and save from all the corrections you have to make.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the AI would fix it for you, though. The dev bot would fix it, wouldn't it?
I mean, maybe it's better to type on your power glove with one hand.
No, I was saying, Jason, I think now actually I'm kind of sold on the power glove. I want a power glove. Because most of us type with one hand anyway, and then you can actually get like your whole...
Well, not most of us type with one hand. Your wackadoo keyboard, one hand keyboard.
No, well, maybe the smartphones, you know, you kind of on the, you know, just...
You know, it's so funny. I was at a... Speaking of keyboards and smartphones, I was at a... we had a family event this past weekend with my in-laws, and my sister-in-law saw me responding to a message on my phone. And I was just using Gboard, but swiping with my thumb. And she was like, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And I was just like, "I'm typing." She's like, "No, this is how you type." And she held her phone and did two things. I'm like, "No." And I showed her how this worked. She'd never seen it before. Didn't even know it was a thing. And like to me, I'm like, "This is how I've been typing for, Jason, decade. How long?
More
like
than a decade
now, right? Like, yeah, right. So it's crazy. Yeah.
I'm a mixture, though. I'm not always dedicated to that.
I'm only doing it swipe ways. Yeah,
so. I pop in and pop out. Yep. Swipe in, swipe out.
Swipe in, swipe out. All right, cool.
All right, last email comes from Chris Barrett, Washington, D.C., who says, like Ron, I too played the USB cable round robin trying to figure out why my Pixel 6 constantly dropped connection from the head unit in my 2015 Kia Soul. I even added the AA wireless dongle in hopes that would help. I also wondered if there was a problem with the USB-A connector. However, after doing some research, I found out there was a firmware update for the car's touchscreen interface that was said to resolve the problems I was having. I downloaded the update from the Kia site and installed it per the instructions, and voila, problem fixed for me. I think it has been at least a year since I did that, and no problems since. May not be everyone's issue, but I know others on the panel have said they too have issues and thought it might help to share this information. Thanks for bringing back the show. The departure of AAA left a big gap in my podcast addict lineup. Chris Barrett. Thank you, well, Chris.
That was like a bingo email. That was a Android Auto email. It was also a Podcast Addict mention email and a AAA wireless mention. Yeah, AA Wireless. That was pretty good, Chris. Good job there. I still haven't got my car fixed. I'm waiting for the dealer to call me and tell me that they have the part that they need to fix my USB ports. But yeah, that's a good. It was funny because I got an email from Subaru telling me that the firmware of my car needed to be updated, and I went to go do it and I couldn't do it, so I called service. They're like, "Oh yeah, no, that email went out by mistake. You're not due for one." I was like, "Oh, okay." I got really disappointed then. So, but troubleshooting cars and connectivity is no fun. So yeah. All right.
Indeed.
Cool. Well, thank you, Chris, Chad, and Alpan for writing us. And you too, get in on the action. We've gotten so many emails recently. We try to pick and choose the best ones. We'll try to get as many as we can, as always, every week. Email us at contact@androidfaithful.com or send us a message on Patreon. We appreciate it. Always good to hear from you all. That's going to wrap up this week's episode. Bravo, Michelle. Great work at Samsung Galaxy Unpacked. I guess take a breather. Are you going to Mobile World Congress?
I want to. Find.
I was going to say, if you were, I was going to get very annoyed because I want that Hamon. But
if anyone's listening here, if you need someone to go to unpack and cover your product, I'm here.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll stay tuned. That's the next big event. So we'll see. In the meantime, Jason, why don't you tell us more about your new show?
My new show. That's right. It launches tomorrow. That would be Wednesday, January 24th. Called AI Inside. Me and Jeff Jarvis, who you already know if you listen to Twit Podcasts and This Week in Google. He's one of the hosts on This Week in Google. Anyways, he and I are going to be talking about AI every week. And really right now, it's looking like it's going to be kind of an interviews-focused show with some news dotted around it and everything. And we're kind of evolving it as we go. So we've got the website, aiinside.show. We do have a Patreon that you can go to at support.aiinside.show. I'm really excited, slightly nervous, because you know when you launch a new show, it's kind of like, oh, I hope everything goes well, and that's tomorrow, so I'm sure things will go just great and dandy, but I'm really excited. I hope you'll check it out, aiinside.show.
Are you going to be live streaming to Twitch as well?
So we will be doing a live stream. We have the live stream to Twitch and to YouTube on both platforms. Do a search for @YellowGoldStudios. That's kind of the name of my kind of content business, as it were, as I'm building it. Yellow Gold Studios. Do a search on YouTube and Twitch. And yes, we're going to be streaming there 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And it should be about an hour. So look for it. Thank you, Ron.
Very exciting. So a little behind the scenes. I know you've been working on this for a while, so I'm so excited to see it get out in the world. So,
me too. Thank you for all your help. You've been a good sounding board.
Hey, we're all one team. I'm very excited to learn more about AI from you and Jeff. Jeff's a pro. He's the best. So
yes, indeed.
Cool.
Thank you, Ron.
So, Michelle, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me everywhere on Twix, Mastodon, Threads, etc. I'm not going to run down the list of platforms I'm on. It's too many to list. You can just search my name, @MichelleRamon. And if you want to follow my work and support my work, better yet, you can go to patreon.com/MichelleRamon. I do share some exclusive posts. I have a Discord community that's pretty active. And just the other day, I shared a tutorial on how to enable Circle to Search early on your Pixel phone if you don't want to wait for Google to roll it out. Ooh, that one got some attention. But if you want to support me, you can head there. And of course, I recommend you also subscribe to Android Faithful because that also supports me because we put a lot of effort into this show.
Yes. Sure do. So, all right. Thank you, Michelle. Wynn, how about you? Where can folks find you?
Sorry. Yes.
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm getting sick from like traveling back east last week. So who am I? I'm an Android developer. I talk about Android development things. You can find my talks and associated code and video at my website, randomlytyping.com. And you can find me on the internet, let's be real, basically on Instagram at QuidCodeMonkey. Maybe I'll be at other places as well, but I mean, I'm just barely on Instagram. So find me there. And here every Tuesday.
Yep. Excellent. And last but not least, you can follow me over on all the various socials at RonXO. And if you're looking for something else to listen to, head over to my other podcast over at ifanboy.com. We released our monthly Media Splode episode where we caught up on what we've been watching over the past couple of months over the holidays. And I talked a lot about the Beckham documentary on Netflix. I went to the theaters to see Poor Things and saw Maestro. But most of all, Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus is such a good show. If you're not watching Slow Horses, check that out. Gary Oldman at his finest. It's fantastic. So go to iFanboy, listen to the whole discussion there. That was a fun one. But we want to thank you for listening to this podcast. You guys are fantastic. We do it for you, the Android community, because we love Android. We love talking about it with you every week. That's going to wrap it up for this week's show. We publish this podcast every Tuesday evening after we live stream it out on YouTube and Twitch. Thanks to our friends and parents or whatnot at Daily Tech News Show for letting us hang out on their YouTube and Twitch channels. Definitely want to check it out. Email us at contact@androidfaithful.com and make sure you go to androidfaithful.com where you can subscribe, find all the links, everything, find the Patreon, everything you need is there. And until next time, we'll be back here because we are the Android Faithful.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.